Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula Gordon. Bill Russell is with me here in Vancouver. We are sitting in a lovely space that is the home of Hildegard Westerkamp. We were talking about ears and bodies and psyches as part of a soundscape. Well, that may be four things that are strange. Soundscape may not be a familiar idea to folks. And the idea of bringing ears and bodies and psyches together in the listening process, that may be fairly new. I'm finding it new. Tell me how we begin to integrate ears, bodies, and psyches into a soundscape. How do I do that?
Well, I think very simply by starting to listen. And I think listening really is the beginning of the consciousness about soundscape, about how our ears function, what our psyche has to say, how to listen to our bodies, all that together.
Don't most people just have a sense, well, of course I listen.
Yeah, but when you begin to really talk about it and go on sound walks.
A sound walk. What is a sound walk?
I'll explain that in a second.
All right.
Okay. There's a lot to cover in this whole area. It's just a sort of a all life experience when you start to listen. When you start to listen in that very conscious way and say, what is actually coming into my ears every day? It's amazing what happens to people's ears. They get open so wide that it is almost too much. And that's exactly what happened to me. Years ago in the early 70s, I was studying music and I met Murray Schafer, who was giving a lecture at, he's a Canadian composer, and he gave a lecture at the University of British Columbia where I was studying music. And after that lecture, my ears had just simply popped open. Mm-hmm. In the way he spoke, in the way he asked us to listen, by simple questions like, how many birds have you heard today? What was the first sound you heard this morning? How many airplanes have you heard today? Etc. And my ears never really closed again after that. And that's usually what I find happens when we teach these courses or when we give workshops, is that people are suddenly saying, I had no idea what's out there, because our habit in urban environments in particular is to block sounds out and to simply not pay attention. The reason being that a lot of the sounds that we encounter in urban environments really aren't giving us much new or interesting information.
Or they may be genuinely threatening.
Or they may be, well, if they were genuinely threatening, we would be hearing them. Like, yeah. If an ambulance siren is telling us something dangerous, we will hear it. Mm-hmm. If it's just another sound that we hear daily, it's not, of course, mm-hmm. then we may ignore it. It's mm-hmm. part of the urban soundscape that we ignore. But usually, if we are in quiet environments, in a natural environment, our ears are usually more alert because they're not being harassed. In the city, we're being harassed, right? I mean, sound is always there. Mm-hmm. And so there's no incentive for the ear to actually search for sound.
And it can't rest.
You talked somewhere about comparing a noisy environment to an authoritarian environment. And yes. I think that's part of what you're saying.
Yes, and actually, why don't I read that little quote? I know exactly where it is. It's something that's a thought that came up. I may have given you this. You can't take this one.
Can you hear the newsletters that are the Soundscape newsletter being shuffled?
Yes. I just wanted to read it because I say it best in writing in this particular concept, in this particular context, but I can't actually find it right now. A noisy environment, yes, I've got it here. A noisy environment and an authoritarian environment can both have this effect. A noisy environment drowns out our footsteps, our breathing, and our normal speaking voice. An authoritarian environment does not have to be loud for us to lower our voices or not to talk at all. This comes out of a thesis that I wrote about background music and foreground music, speaking about the Muzak Corporation, where it suddenly occurred to me that the Muzak Corporation is the first establishment of a sort of a soft-spoken authority through sound that has designed soundscapes in ways that make us behave in certain ways that the corporation wants us to.
And we're not paying any attention to it, and it still affects our behaviors.
And that's exactly what the Music Corporation wants. It does not want us to listen. That is, in fact, the statement in its whatever write-ups they have, not to be listened to. Muzak is not to be listened to, because originally there was a message there that through the restaurant or through the store owner or through the factory, we were supposed to work better, we were as workers, or we were supposed to shop more, etc. And there was a message there that had to do with profit. Mm-hmm. Profit making,
and it's subliminal, whether it's subliminal or not.
That's right, and to me, that's a certain authority. Mm-hmm. Now we can think of an authority like Hitler's voice that came over the radio in Germany, where I grew up. I wasn't there at that time, mm-hmm. but certainly that's part of my history, mm-hmm. and that was a very clear voice of authority coming through the radio, using the radio as an authoritative medium mm-hmm. to spread a propaganda, to spread a message that was very authoritarian. Mm-hmm. And in that context, the radio was a very authoritarian medium because it allowed that authority to speak, right?
As you said, this is very complex. That's operating at many levels. It doesn't require the radio to be authoritarian, though Hitler used it with remarkable facility.
Yes. During that same era, Churchill and Roosevelt used it with authority as well, and they were not authoritarian to our way of thinking.
Of course, and it was a very new medium at that time still, and it was used in a very creative ways. On the one hand, when mm-hmm. one listens to some of the early radio programs, they're fantastic, and mm-hmm. I would think some of the sound effects men at that time or mm-hmm. women were very much soundscape people. Mm-hmm. They knew how we listen. They mm-hmm. knew how to use sound. They knew how to psychologically draw us into the radio to listen to
it. Did some of that go away as television and movies, particularly television, took a central part of people's home entertainment?
I think the creativity in radio production went away, yes. I think what
Did
you're trying
to... Did we get lazy as listeners when we got television to give the visual cues?
Yes, I think there is an emphasis on television that many people don't really know anymore what it is like to have radio as a creative medium.
Well, let me go farther than that and say it isn't just radio. I think you could make a plausible argument that the whole soundscape, using your word, has been diminished by virtue of people having the pictures provided.
And not listening.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that happens on television to the television viewer is exactly the same thing that happens to the person in the soundscape, is you don't really listen to the sounds mm-hmm. that are happening around that medium. The same in film sound. The people who work with film sound are also soundscape people, and that they know exactly how soundscape functions in our on
well,
our
in
psyche.
Fact, create it. Most of the sound that you see, especially in movies, is completely created outside of the actual filming.
It's soundscape design, and people really know how to use it. But the interesting thing is that most people are not aware of how the soundscape is designed and how it works on them. And it's to me, there's a parallel
there. You say aware, that a lot of this acts at a pre-conscious, extra-conscious, outside of the awareness.
I mean, subconscious, maybe.
The assumption is, you know, I see what I look at, I hear what I listen to, and I do that consciously. And my impression from what you're saying, and certainly listening to some of your composition, the one I've heard, it operates at a, I would say, pre-conscious level, but it is a different. It has a different impact than just, you know, sitting and listening to words or to, how to say, programmatic mm-hmm. music, sounds.
Yeah. Well,
traditional.
I think I also want to be clear that I'm not judging the fact that there's many times when we don't listen consciously. Mm-hmm. Our ears receive it anyways. There's really just simply different levels of listening. There's no judgment involved here. It's just that at certain times in our lives, certain sounds are in the background. Right now, we are listening to each other's conversation. Mm-hmm. We're not necessarily hearing the furnace in the background, mm-hmm. although the microphone
it's probably might. There.
So we have that kind of selectivity, which is an amazingly wonderful thing to have. This is how our ear functions. It's again a matter of being aware of that. It does that. When I would be critical of unawareness towards sound is when people let the noise of daily life enter, get stressed out by it, and don't know where it's coming from. That's mm-hmm. when I would become critical, because there is a sense of imbalance. There is no ecological thinking behind that. We just simply let it come into our ears and be wiped out by it.
We're going to come back on this notion of ecological thinking about sound in just a moment. Please stay with us for the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and Paula Gordon, that is I, are in Vancouver, British Columbia. We were with Hildegard Westerkamp, and we're going to be right back with more of the Paula Gordon Show. Please stay with us.